The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
We're going to flick through the Sunday newspapers, and my guest this morning is Gina London, Sunday Independent columnist and former news anchor with CNN. Gina, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Pat. It's always great to be with you.
Lots of things in the papers today. You know, it is silly season virtually. We're not quite in August, but there's still loads to read.
Well, there's a lot going on, especially when you consider what's really in a lot of the headlines here in Ireland is about the ongoing debate and controversy around these very fast and dangerous e-scooters. Their cover of the Sindo, for example, has a whole discussion about whether or not the retailers online, in person, are now taking off some of these illegally over 20 miles or kilometers per hour. There, I said it. If they're taking those off the market to try to finally make some changes. And in some ways, though, of course, as we're looking at on Monday, that the lawmakers are going to be talking about what to finally do about these.
They may be anticipating that there will be fines for retailers who stock over-speeding scooters or scooters that are capable of over-speeding, and therefore they're maybe just selling them into other markets.
Possibly, and that's certainly they're right if it's not regulated. But this to me, as I was reading through all the different stories, and of course, as I mentioned, there's the story in the Sindo on the front page about the retailers who, as you said, are taking some of the things off the market. And then there's a story in the Times talking about this poor older woman who was run down by an overspeeding scooter and ultimately died, and how she was an elderly woman and her daughter is calling for an outright ban. But the issue here to me is how slowly regulation is to keep up with things that are happening. And when we've got the reports that have been, of course, come out recently, which has really triggered a lot of this, that there's been a 50% increase in brain injuries among children due to these scooters, there's enormous pressure to finally make some sort of an action.
We looked yesterday on the program at different jurisdictions and how the Swedes do it, the Norwegians do it, the Danes do it, the Germans do it, and so on. In the UK, for example, we learned that there's an overall ban on e-scooters. They're doing some trials in some areas, but basically, if they see a guy in a scooter in one of these areas that is not a trial area, they can simply take it.
Well, these are the things that should all be considered, certainly, when they begin to discuss this in earnest tomorrow. And one of the shopkeepers in that article in the Sindo, for example, he says, look, he's referring to a modeling opportunity of what they do in Spain, where you have everyone who gets a scooter has to register that scooter. There is a limitation on how fast they can go, and you're also required to wear helmets. So there are some common sense structure that could be put in, but putting something in is better than not putting anything in at all. And is it up for an outright ban? Well, I guess we'll see what they discuss tomorrow.
I had a very interesting text from a serving guard yesterday who said that in Britain they had a scourge of moped robberies, you know, where they'd whiz along and whip. If someone's standing at a bus stop, for example, on a mobile phone, these moped robbers would simply swoop in and steal. But what they did in Britain, they gave the cops the power to run them down, literally to use their cars.
Overtake.
They're cop cars and literally bump into them and make them fall over.
Okay, well, I don't think that's what's going to be up for discussion on Monday.
It might be hard in an Irish jurisdiction where, you know, we are so careful about all of these things, you'd be sued and we'd all end up in the courts. But over there, the amount of moped crime went down by 90% in a
year. Well, I suppose it would be if you're in jeopardy of getting crashed out by a police person. Okay.
Now, the
I come from the U.S. where everybody has guns. I don't know that is an extreme. Okay.
The Doyle has gone into recess and the TDs, if not the ministers, are off on their holidays. But there's lots of politics in the papers.
Well, there's a lot going on still before they come back in mid-September. And there's a lot of discussion in the newspapers about how are they faring? What are the different ministers up to? What's going on as they're continuing? For example, the leaders, there's a report card there that was given in one of the papers over in, once again, the Sindo. I promise I'm not just saying the Sindo because I write for them as well, but Aisling Maloney gives a report card of all the leaders from Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan saying that he's on deck to become the next Fianna Fáil chief.
Even and yet he's embroiled in a huge row with on the free legal aid scheme. We will be talking with John Duggan about the World Cup later on, but there's a story on the front of the Business Post about RT failing to sell 90% of the ads in the World Cup drinks breaks.
Well, we got to have the drinks break so we can sell more ads, and that's a US thing, of course. And so it's difficult, though, if you aren't able to get those ad spaces filled. What are you going to do in that time? It'll be very interesting. And certainly RTE needs more of that revenue that they generate.
What they did, the panel just kept talking.
Well, of course, that's what they would do.
The lead into the hydration break. And it's interesting. I mean, there's some of the stadiums, and I haven't been in them in the United States, perhaps you have, which are totally air-conditioned.
Oh, well, for sure. I mean, the drinks break, it's a maneuver to be able to get more ad space. Because, for example, when they have the final tonight in the MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, which I haven't been to, but that's a fully enclosed stadium. There's no heat going on. It's nothing like the heat wave here in Ireland inside that stadium. But yet, it's a thing to get commercial revenue. And unfortunately, RTE hasn't been able to take advantage of it fully. But we will be certainly watching Spain and Argentina tonight.
Now, the Sunday Times has an intriguing story. And you were asking me before the show, why would Irish people be interested in this story? It's about surrogacy.
Well, this is a fascinating one because this is a story, I suppose, on one hand, you think, oh, isn't this a great story? Here's a German gay politician. He and his husband have announced the arrival of their new child. And isn't that terrific? Until you go, wait a minute, you're from a party that actually opposed, which is the law in Germany, to not have children through surrogacy. So we have Jens Spahn. He's a Christian Democrat from the Christian Democratic Union, and they actually did vote against this idea of having surrogacy. And now in Germany, it is an absolutely banned policy. And yet, here he was with his husband getting this child, and he thought he could maybe ride the hypocrisy wave but he had to call it quits because
it is a hypocrisy wave. I mean, they voted against, or he voted against it. And the picture of the two gentlemen, I think it's a selfie, Jens Spahn and Daniel Funke, his husband, with their baby in a stroller.
Look, on one hand, more power to them. Congratulations. And on the other hand, though, you aren't allowed to get a free pass on something that you voted against in the legislature. So it's a story, I would say, that is an interesting, on one hand, human interest story. And also, hey, politicians, you're not supposed to be able to get away with things that everybody else has to adhere to in Germany.
Now, there's lots about Brenda Fricker scattered throughout the papers, and her passing has been marked on News Talk several times since her death was announced. Someone else who's dominating news coverage is Andy Burnham. You're looking forward to the Burnham era? We'll be talking about that later on, by the way, in the program.
Well, of course I'm looking forward to it, but it feels like a revolving door of prime ministers over in the UK, as of course now this is the seventh one in a decade, and he's about to begin his very first week on Monday over at 10 Downing Street. And it's a lot of discussion and a lot of projections, Pat, that are dominating the headlines right now about, has he prepared? Has he had time to think about what is his legacy that's going to separate him from Keir Starmer and the others who have come before him in Labour, and how are they going to make any difference?
It's an interesting thing. I was reading up on Andy Burnham, but more generally about UK politics. And there's talk about novice politicians, that the turnover now is so rapid, you know, getting rid of leaders, sacking cabinet ministers, resignations, changing administrations, that you get what would be called novice cabinet ministers.
Well, that
people who've little enough experience getting big jobs.
That's well, of course, and he'd be a prime example from mayor to leader in less than a month. When you think about what his rise has been, so
he was knocking around London politics years ago before he resigned to take up that
London politics, as we all saw from Boris Johnson. Just because you've been a mayor doesn't mean that you're ready to take over the entire country and lead it with any kind of integrity and forward thinking. So it will be, he's untested largely. And so we'll see what will happen with him.
Now, often on a Sunday morning, we're ambushed by news that doesn't make the newspapers, and, you know, the retaliatory strikes, which again, in a few minutes time, we'll be talking about by the US over the killing of US service people in Jordan, and one military personnel missing in action. We don't know what the background to that is. But the other story that broke overnight was the Tate brothers. You've heard of the Tate brothers.
Oh, come on. These guys, I mean, Andrew Tate, former kickboxing champion in the, like, early, I don't know, 2014, 2016, but notorious, along with his brother Tristan, for self-described misogyny, the whole manosphere thing. They became big social media stars, for lack of a better word, really about just hyper-masculinity and toxic masculinity, as it was described. And now they've both been arrested overnight in Miami to be extradited to the UK, potentially.
That'll be
because there are ongoing charges and additional charges that have been filed.
Recently, we spoke to Heidi Blake. She's an investigative reporter with the New Yorker. And we asked her to explain to us at the time, you know, how come these guys who were arrested in Romania under house arrest then, how come they managed to, if you like, escape the law? And this is part of what she said.
And Tate was instrumental in mobilizing a huge number of young men to vote for Trump in the 2024 election. And, you know, he has leveraged that to his advantage. So in the months following the election, he declared pretty openly that Trump is the president and we will now be freed. And U.S. officials made clear their displeasure at the way that Romania was handling the case against the Tates. And you know, eventually, under mounting pressure from the U.S., Romanian prosecutors did decide to release the Tate brothers from that travel ban. And since then, they have been traveling freely around. They flew straight to the U.S. They were greeted as free speech martyrs and heroes in conservative circles as they toured the country, being kind of feted wherever they went, and they continue to kind of benefit from those connections. They've been publicly defended by Elon Musk, by Donald Trump Jr., by, you know, hugely influential conservative figures like Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens, and so those political connections have been really instrumental in getting them to the position they're now in, where the case against them appears to be stalled. And they seem pretty confident that they are going to face no action whatsoever.
Now, isn't there a delicious irony there that the US intervenes because, you know, the Trump administration, through its fellow travelers, seems to be very sympathetic to the Tate brothers for whatever reason. So the Romanians let them go. They head to the United States, and what happens?
Well, the cronyism that we can talk about forever about the whole Trump circle and all of that sort of sphere. And of course, yes, as the speaker just mentioned, that they have been big MAGA supporters, and they did rally a lot of the people that came out and voted for him in the last election. But it does sound like finally the chickens have come to roost, Pat. They face tax evasion, money laundering, rape charges, sex trafficking, charges against children. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So far, there are 21 charges against Andrew and Tristan, and that have stemmed from like 2016 to 2021. And now these additional charges that have been filed in the UK, with authorities in the US finally arresting these guys. You can see them being taken away in handcuffs if you look online now. And interesting attire, by the way, from Andrew Tate with the hyper-masculinity. He looks like he's being arrested in a pair of capri pants. But I'm just making a quick judgment call on that. At any rate, that does potentially mean that they will finally face some judgment in the UK, whether they didn't get it in Romania, where they had set up shop.
Well, in the course of the interview with Heidi Blake, she was telling us that they felt they could act with impunity in Romania because they felt they had bought, if you like, the prosecution, they had bought the government, they had friends in the highest of places. Now, I don't know how the judicial system in Romania actually works, but you'd have more confidence that if they managed to extradite them from the US to British justice, that system is something we're familiar with. They will get a defense and they'll have, you know, it'll be argued out in court, in public.
You hope that it's going to be more by the book and that it's going to be not having influence for corruption. Look, I lived in Romania for a period of time, over a year, and there is certainly a lot of talk about corruption within that system and being able to be persuasive and buy your way out and things like that. Yeah.
And as an American, you probably felt the high moral ground when you lived there.
Look,
anymore.
I tell people I'm Canadian most times when I'm traveling abroad. I go to Switzerland on Monday, Pat, and we'll just keep a low profile. But when I was in Romania, for example, that was very common for the police to just stop you and ask for your ID and also say, let's have a little payment and I'll give you give me a little walking cash and I will let you walk as well.
Now, whether the Tate brothers end up in prison and where they end up in prison is still an open question. But there are two people who are in prison. They're the Chalk children. And there's a lot of coverage in the papers about the assault and the convictions and how perhaps the young mother did not expect to be in jail, but she's in jail and but may get out before Christmas.
Well, a lot of stories around, again, notorious siblings, maybe not at the same level of the Tate brothers. But when you think about Bill and Allison now finally being sentenced to 2.5 years behind bars for this, from all accounts, an assault on innocent people in a hotel late at night, lots of drink involved from the Bill and Allison demanding midnight food, and now the opportunity for them to be in jail looks like it's going to be shortened because of overcrowding. That's what's coming out in the articles that I was reading in today's papers, that they might be out by Christmas, which is hardly the 2.5 year term.
Well,
they
did
were
get part of it
to.
Was suspended, so they were expected to spend at least a year in jail. But then I don't know whether good behavior plays a part there, and certainly when the justice system or the prison system is trying to decide who they let out on early release, they kind of say, well, whoever it might be, is that person a danger to society?
Sure.
Are they likely to reoffend? And if the answer in the Chalk Children's case is hardly, they might qualify for early release.
Yeah, well, there are, certainly there are always considerations when you put into a sentence about what actually, who else is out there in the prison population. But that said, it is one of those situations where I think as you look at what happened and then the sentence that happened, that something should be done, and it looks like a little bit of that.
You can't have one law for
you're not
a certain
supposed
segment
to,
of society and another for
that's the theory anyway.
A more entitled sector. All right, Gina, look, thank you very much for joining us. Gina London, who is a columnist with the Sunday Independent and former news anchor with CNN. Gina, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.